Thank you for downloading this New Zealand Sports Radio show. We have a new way that you can support us. There is a link in the notes down below where you can make a one-off donation to New Zealand Sports Radio. Thank you for support and enjoy the show.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
It is actually 8 o'clock.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to our Monday edition of Swinging from the Hip. I'm just going back to my script. Where's it gone? There it is. It's our first one on a Monday night. And we were hoping to be able to get some of our guests back by moving it to Monday night, and we've succeeded. And we've got Sharubin. Welcome, Sharubin. How you doing?
Very good. Very good. Lovely to see you.
It's good to have you back on. It's like good that Monday nights work for the coaches.
Yes.
Well, coming up on our Monday night show tonight, we go back and look at what's been happening in the IPL this week. We have a quick look at the Plunkett Shield, which kicked off today. We'll have a chat to our guest about how preseason is going in club cricket. And we'll look at the career of J.R. Reid, who sadly passed away this week that's just gone. But back to normal transmission. So we'll kick it in the guts with a bit of historical events in this week in cricket. And we go to the 14th of October in 1953, the birth of the first coloured man to play for England, Ronald Butcher. He was born in Barbados, but came to England at 14. And after success with Middlesex, he was called up for the Prudential Trophy match against Australia at Edgbaston in 1980. So that was a bit ahead before its time, so to speak. And hello to Simon there in one of the YouTube chat rooms there. In 1989, the fourth one-day hat-trick, West Indies looked to be cruising to victory over Pakistan and Sharjah when Wasim Akram clean bowled Jeff Dujon, Malcolm Marshall and Kirtley Ambrose with consecutive deliveries. Pakistan eventually squeezed home by 11 runs. I don't remember it, but sounds like it would have been a good one.
For sure.
2005, the ICC Super Test in Sydney, and I do remember this vaguely, and I don't know if they had one more after that, but anyway, so this was the Super Test, the first one in Sydney between leading team Australia, who was the number one team at the time, even though they didn't really have rankings at that time. Australia was still considered number one, and a star-studded World 11. Wasn't a spectacular success, to say the least. Australia took 4 days out of a scheduled six. It was supposed to be a six-day test to wrap up a 210-run victory. Now, that side, the internationals included Rahul Dravid, Brian Lara, Mutia Mulirathan. Leg spinners Stuart McGill and Shane Warne basically accounted for 15 of the 20 World 11 wickets, McGill trumping his fetid partner with 9. And the World 11 were bowled out for 190 and 144.
Did they play that in Sydney?
It was in Sydney. That's right.
Yeah. So in that around that time, Sydney was renowned as a turning wicket, and I remember Alan Border in a won a test for Australia against the West Indies with this very average left arm tweakers. Yeah. And he got, I think he got 9 or 10 wickets in the match, which is
it's interesting. It's interesting. You sort of say, as you say, back then Sydney was a turner. You'd go from Boxing Day, the match at Melbourne, and then it's like, oh, the New Year's Day test in Sydney, and it's going to be on a turning pitch. And that myth still continues to today, doesn't it? We're going to Sydney. Oh, they'll have to pick spinners. It's like, when was the last time Sydney really turned?
Yeah, that's right. The thing is, I think Shane Warne, he changed so many of those views, Ashwin, in terms of, you know, he actually did well in Brisbane, for instance, where it bounces.
Bounces, yeah.
Yeah, and there's a bit of a breeze. And even in Perth, again, with the bounce, and the Fremantle Doctor was this thing, because Warney drifted it in so much. And then if you can bounce it, he always liked bounce more than turn, because he said that was going to be his thing.
I mean, you know, as a batsman, obviously at a very lower level, but even with when a spinner's turning it, you can sort of start to get used to the turn of the ball. One thing you just can't get used to is bounce and trying to control something that might just pop up a bit more than expected, and that's trying to get over the top of it. It's always so hard, even the sort of reading spin you can do, but bounce you can, harder to control.
Completely agree, especially on a good length. If you can land it consistently on a good length, do you go back, do you go forward? It's just all these
caught
questions
in between.
You know?
Yeah.
That's it.
So moving on to the 15th of October in 1990, the cricket world received its first introduction to the deadliest old ball partnership of them all. Who's that going to be?
Oh, I'd go for Waqar and Wasim.
That's it. It is them. Waqar and Wasim. She had 10 wickets in a test for the first time, taking 15 in all as Pakistan thrashed New Zealand by an innings and 43 runs in Karachi. If 11 of the 15 were LBW or bowled, it started a run in which Wasim and Waqar took 10 or more wickets between them and 18 of the 24 tests they played in together between 1990 and 1994. Yeah, absolutely.
Amazing. Yeah, amazing stat.
It's funny. I mean, I remember like a test match in Hamilton. And we needed something like about 90 runs to win the test.
I remember that too.
And Waqar Yunus just basically skilled us. Oh. And as a New Zealand fan, on one hand, it's like, but you know, to lose the test match, but to watch Wasim and Waqar bowl was just, it was great. I mean, even though you're playing against them and against your team, sort of thing. But no, good news.
Complete awe. You know, complete awe for me. I remember that vividly. I reckon Taz probably remembers it a bit better than you and me, I'd say.
What's that then? What's that? It was actually a really good test match. I remember Swindoll actually picked up quite a lot of wickets too with his swing bowling.
Yeah, in swing, out swing, yes.
Yeah. But moving on to better news for New Zealand, on the same day in the year 2000, a historic day for New Zealand in Nairobi, and they beat India by 4 wickets in the final of the ICC Knockout Trophy. That was the first, and sadly only, victory in an international competition for New Zealand. This is the part that cracks me up about that one. The hero was Chris Kenns, who defied a dodgy knee. It seems like New Zealand has to have a player with a dodgy knee in a major tournament who defied a dodgy knee to hit a brilliant and unbeaten 102 as New Zealand reached the target of 265 with 2 balls to spare.
Amazing game. Amazing game.
It was a great game. I suppose being a pessimistic Kiwi, you always felt that you were never going to win the game though? Until we got
completely.
The last run sort of thing.
Yeah, completely. And especially the way I remember, I think it was Tendulkar and Ganguly opened, and they were going great guns. And Chris Kenns came on to bowl, and because he had a dodgy knee, he kept bowling like slower balls. And these guys, you know, everyone else was bowling, trying to get them out, and they were just sitting there smashing it. And he bowled, if I'm not mistaken, I remember he bowled a maiden, Chris Cairns, with slower balls.
Slower balls.
Because he couldn't do anything else because of his knee, you know. And then that just stuffed him up a bit. And then suddenly, you know, after being 80 for no loss in 9 overs or something, they got to only 260, which to me should have never happened. It should have got far more, which would have been game over.
Yeah, and game over.
But, yeah, and then we just batted out of our skins, and especially Chris Cairns. Oh,
Chris Cairns.
I mean, at the peak of his powers, you know, just he almost didn't do that enough in his career for me, because he was such an incredible player.
Oh, but, look, you know, we've had quite a few, and Chris Cairns fits in this mold of guys that were just so much better with the bat than what they actually delivered. Their bowling, that, you know, Chris Cairns bowling, you know, he was never the opener. He was obviously third and fourth coming in, and he did his job in this in really well as that sort of coming in, following up the opening bowlers and that, right, all rounder. Yeah. But the batting, he just felt he had more that he could have sort of given.
Completely. I'll share with you. I was at the Basin Reserve, Australia, New Zealand. Brett Lee, Shane Warne versus Chris Cairns. And I'll never forget it. Chris Cairns was smashing both Brett Lee and Shane Warne. And one particular shot off Shane Warne, he was standing, you know, straight up, and the ball was outside his leg. He turned around and he almost straight drove it through square leg for six. It was like an unbelievable shot. And for Brett Lee, he was just short, you know, short back left and just trying to get bat on it pretty much. But if you get bat on it, it's gone. You know,
the faster it comes to you, the faster it goes.
Right. That's right. And just complete control of the bat face, you know. And I think Chris Cairns, I don't know. I mean, sometimes he did have his problems with coaches and this and that. And you wonder if you had a better man manager, would we have got more out of him? You know, who knows, man? Who knows?
Look, I mean, it's interesting, isn't it? I mean, for one of the teams globally that can least afford it, some of our superstars over time have always had issues with the coaching staff.
Big time.
And last few years, it's been way, you know, there hasn't been any issues there. I think, obviously, the modern-day management styles work a lot better. But going back, you know, classic, obviously, talking of Chris Cairns and Glenn Turner, never really got on. No.
Absolutely. I mean, Turner, you know, he didn't get on with many of them, you know. But the thing is, Turner, to him, it was like, well played. You know, like this, he just gives him a wink.
Yep. But,
you know, not the old adulation that these guys are used to.
Here's a certificate.
Exactly. You know, so, look, who knows? Who knows? But but talking about that, even Richard Hadley, he had Jeremy Coney, who was his captain. He didn't get on with him.
They used to talk between somebody else on the field. Pass messages that, between the two of them.
I just find that amazing. That they played international cricket like that.
They played international cricket like that, and, you know, especially at home, the success that they still had.
Oh, phenomenal, you know. I think they respected each other, but they couldn't, you know, just hated each other. It was just unbelievable. You just can't fathom a relationship like that these days, you know what I mean? Yep.
Not these days, no.
No.
So moving on, 16th of October in 1952. We remember that well, don't we? In Delhi, Pakistan became the 7th test playing nation. So it's their first introduction to test cricket. Like most before them, they were hammered in their inaugural match. India eased to a victory by an innings and 70 runs in that one.
Right.
In 17th of October, 1998. The day that Mark Taylor equaled Don Bradman's record for 334 and then declared the innings. So basically the story around this is obviously like he didn't want to pass Don Bradman's score. So there's actually a bit more information to it. He ended up on 334 at the end of day's play, and he was contemplating batting in the morning, but he didn't want it to seem like he was only betting on to get to beat Don Bradman's score. So he declared the innings overnight.
That was interesting, because that didn't happen later in the latter years when Matthew Hayden broke Lara's record, and then Lara broke Hayden's record again to get 400. And, you know, it was all of it. You know, it was very interesting for me.
Beat that record.
Yeah, keep betting.
Don't worry about the game. We'll beat the record.
That's right.
Australia's, in 1999, on the same day, Australia's record-breaking run of 16 consecutive test victories started. They started it with a 10-wicket win over Zimbabwe in a one-off test in Harare on this day. So that's that, and then they went on to 16 consecutive test wins from there.
That's a pretty good record. That's a pretty good record. That's unbelievable.
And as I say, consecutive test victory. So there was no draws in there either, no, was there? No. I mean, it's just like, it's not like, oh, yeah, they got 16 wins without a loss and they had a few draws in between. No, it was 16 test victories.
Look, it's the kind of thing that you think it's never going to get beaten, that something like that. I mean, you never know, of course.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you're 100% right. It's just like you start to get records where you sort of think, that's never going to get beaten. But I suppose at the end of the day, records are there to be broken as well.
Yes, exactly.
So in 1955 of 17th of October, Pakistan and New Zealand met for the first time. So New Zealand traveled over to Karachi to play Pakistan for the first time. Didn't go too well. Pakistan with a decisive win in that first contest between the two. 18th of October in 1969, the Hyderabad, I like these stories, the Hyderabad crowd went feral and reacted badly when India were bowled out for 89 on the third day of the third and final test against New Zealand. The day had started badly when the groundsman admitted that he'd forgotten to mow the wicket, and New Zealand's captain, Graham Dowling, refused to let him allow him to remedy the situation. So on a greener than usual surface in India, India slumped it from 21 for 1 to 49 for 9. But then Ventragravan, and I've totally butchered his name and apologise profusely, but I can say the next one, Bishan Bedi, they had a partnership for the last wicket for 40 for the, and basically were happy to stretch out the score there a little bit before Bishan Bedi was dismissed and the crowd stoned the police and lit bonfires.
Funny.
And they actually, so the roof had a thatched roof and they tried to set fire to the thatched roof.
Oh my God. Unreal.
It's interesting though, isn't it? It was something that we sort of became accustomed to from Indian supporters. And you know, the classic was when their team went overseas and performed badly, and the burning of effigies in the streets, and you know, the riots and that sort of thing. It all seems to have calmed down. They don't seem to get so aggrieved when things don't go so well now.
I think hopefully they're learning, but who knows?
Same day in 1992, Zimbabwe began life as a test-playing nation. Right. With a shocker of a draw against India. Now, I won't go into the details because it was pretty boring. The scoring was slow and laborious, and then India came into bat and were slower than Zimbabwe. So it was destined to be a draw. And finally, 19th of October, 1982, Pakistan wrapped up a clean sweep with a 9-wicket victory in the third test against Australia in Lahore. Only the second time second whitewash Australia suffered in the 20th century. Now, the first was in South Africa in 1970 season, and the next would only come in 2010 in India. So I think it just goes on there. You know, we talk about Australia's success, dominance. It's something that's just been in cricket over a long period of time. We've talked about their 16 test victories a little bit earlier. They are a very successful cricket team from when cricket started, effectively.
Well, the funny thing is, I mean, we just had the All Blacks play the Wallabies, and I think we might have talked about this on the show before. It's rugby to New Zealand is like cricket to Australia. Mm. You know, it's very much their number one sport, and
it's interesting, isn't it? It's almost not even talked about in terms of the fact is that cricket is Australia's number one sport by a long way, isn't it? I mean, we go on about, obviously, most of the talk centres around winter sports, AFL, rugby league, soccer, rugby, and netball, of course, for the females as well. But the reality is that cricket's far and away more popular than any other sport in Australia.
And even the people that play the winter sports, you know, the likes of, you know, Cameron Smith and all those guys, you know, superstars of the game, even they acknowledge that it's cricket, you know, and they'll turn up for a cricket game and try and play somewhere, or, you know, things like that. And that's why they're bloody good. And they spend, I think their climate, even, you know, it's good for cricket, you know, most of the states.
Well, what's happened in the last few years? In the last few years, we've been playing cricket and effectively in winter, because they go play it up in Darwin. They go play cricket in Darwin in winter.
Brisbane's another one. Brisbane's another one, Ashwin, where, you know, they actually, the cricket in winter is better than in the summer, because it's too hot in the summer. So they actually prefer to play in the winter, you know, because the climate's better. But to me, they do cricket pretty well. I mean, you know, not just internationals. Even if you go and play, you know, Sunday game.
Yeah.
The standard of cricket is up there, man. I lived in Melbourne for 3 years, and I tell you, it was tough. It was.
Look, I mean,
carry on. Yeah.
I was going to say, you know, we've had Hussein on the show, obviously, and he's alluded to the systems and that they have in there. Rohit, he's got his brother-in-law who lives in Sydney, and in an area called Mossman, and he says that they call it, it's funny because it's in Mossman, which is in New South Wales, Sydney, and it's called the Allan Border Oval, even though Allan Border is a Queenslander. But and he says the facilities there that his nephew that lives in Australia, who's 9, same age as my son, and it's just like, it's just phenomenal. The practice sessions with the young boys girls teams is, you know, world class sort of thing, and just phenomenal. And and no wonder. And then we sort of see, as Simon says, every Australian state basically, you know, might as well have a representative team. You know, that's world capable, pretty much. Mm. I mean, obviously, you're going to have the odd off year here and there, aren't you?
Mm. Well, the thing is, the Australian part of the reason, I mean, Australia's good, but they're not as good as they have been in the past, and that's partly due to the the first class system. It's not as strong as it has been in the past, you know, and I think that's probably to do with, you know, other T20 things going on, and, you know, people maybe, but, you know, who knows? I mean, I've just heard murmurings that it's not as strong, because they used to, the Sheffield Shield was, you know, that was a tough competition.
Yeah, it was a tough competition. It was. And you're right. I mean, like, we've heard recently over the last year, in terms of, especially with the Big Bash getting that high profile, how that Sheffield Shield state one day competitions, etc., really don't really have the levels that they used to.
Yeah, the kudos, the respect. Yeah, completely right. And
now, you know, just digressing off that onto that. You know, with your involvement in cricket and at the level that you're involved in, with all that focus on T20, really the pathways for somebody who's a builder of an innings. You know, if you're coming through the ranks, I would never make it in cricket today at all, because I couldn't smash a ball. But I could. I was an opener, and I worked the innings, and I'd hold up an end while those runs were scored at the other end. There really isn't that place for that type of player anymore. You're scoring runs at a greater rate. That's the way it seems. Is that sort of just a perception, or is that actually reality?
No, look, the point is, like, if you look at Premier Cricket or Premier Reserve Cricket, which I'm the premiers where I'm involved, and but also coaching reserves. And you know, you got 2 day stuff, and then you got 1 day stuff, and then you got T20.
T20, yeah.
But the prestige is still with the 2 days.
That's good to hear.
Yeah. It's still there. So someone who does build an innings has a place. You just can't have everyone building innings. You know, you got to have one person building an innings, maybe two, but the rest of them need to score once the ball's got older, because you want to try and progress the game in some respect to try to get so that you score quickly, so that you give your bowlers more time to bowl the opposition out.
Twice.
You know? So ideally, you want to bowl first, but you know that doesn't. You know, that sometimes works out, but sometimes, obviously, if it's too flat, you can't, you know, and you go, you play a first innings game. But, Simon's right. Sky Sports, too. I actually saw it today. The Sheffield Shield matches were on during the day. It was live on Sky Sports, too, which is...
Not good for cricket fanatics, isn't it? Your wife's telling you, what are you doing? Are you doing some work or not? And there's cricket on the TV.
And I mean, at the moment, it's so hard because there's IPL replays and then there's the Sheffield Shield and, you know, all sorts going on. But I mean,
it's only leading to divorce.
Yeah. Look, I just call it time management. Better time management, I think, is required, you know.
Yeah.
It's intriguing. I mean, the Sheffield Shield's an interesting one. I mean, I don't know enough about it to comment, but I know in the past it has been the main reason why Australia was so good.
Yep.
You know, people.
Yeah. I mean, well, you had the Martin Crowe going to play in the Sheffield Shield competition for a year or so. You know, to basically get that competition effectively, but also it was also in preparation for a tour of Australia.
That's right. Yeah. Well, there was another guy. One of our greats, I believe, Aravinda De Silva. He played first class cricket in just about every country. He played in New Zealand. Played for the Aces. He played in South Africa, in Australia. I think he played in India. I think definitely in England for Kent. And that actually made him such a really good all-round player because he's used to the conditions in different countries.
Yeah,
very smart thing to do, I think, as a batsman especially, and a bowler, because you know everywhere it's kind of different.
I think it's particularly smart as a batsman, isn't it? Because a bowler gets opportunities to change his game. The batsman's out once and he's gone. So for a batsman to adjust, come and learn, adjust. Learn the conditions. I remember Aravinda when he played for the Aces, because there was this one game. They didn't have a big chase on, and he just blasted the ball. You know, this was pre T20 as well, so you know you didn't get the blasting like you do these days. But he just came in and the ball went to all parts of Eden Park number one, and it was on. And it was just phenomenal. It was awesome to watch. He must have needed to go to the toilet bathroom or something. So he had to get it over and done with quickly.
The thing with him is he was very short. I mean, like almost extremely short. But that actually made him play the pull shot to balls that, you know, taller batsmen or average height batsmen would actually maybe be even on the front foot maybe or back foot, you know, here.
Yep.
But he could just get under it and give it
and just swivel.
And I remember the 267 at the Basin Reserve. Oh, mate. The number of pull shots that landed in the R.A. Vaughan stand is amazing. Unbelievable, you know. And so different to the way we play, you know, where we are more about, in New Zealand, we're all about play straight.
In the V.
When it's short, after about 50, you can go for it. And, you know, it was just all that. You know, and that's fine. You know, everyone's different. But I was just amazed at the power that the guy got with such a, you know, but he hit it. He absolutely hit it like it, you know, with the kitchen sink.
Stayed hit. Yep. Absolutely. So and, good sort of like, well, obviously we've left a bit of our history there, but we'll move into, obviously you mentioned that you're involved with the Prems as well as the reserves as well. How's the build up like? How's the build up been going towards the start of the season, which I believe is 31st of October? It how's it been indeed. Going for you? Been warm up games and the like, and teams coming together.
Look, it's been good. It's I mean the preseason wasn't as long, unfortunately, because of COVID and so on. But I think we're in a good position. We started. Not the weekend that just passed, but the one before, we went to the Premier Boys, 14 of us went to Hawke's Bay for a T20 tournament.
Oh, yeah.
And basically, the reason was not the T20, it was more the fact that you could play on grass and, have a little hit round. And the pitches, on the Friday, we played a game and the pitch was going everywhere. But, to me, that's okay. You just got to adapt.
Early season, yep.
Absolutely, and I think we got 108 and we got them out for 72 or something like that, So, it's just a bowler's game, and that's fair enough. That can happen in cricket. But I've got to say that the pitches were different to what we are used to over here. Like, it had a bit more bounce, for instance.
Yep.
And it was shorter. It almost like sort of had a bounce that was sort of sticky bounce kind of thing. It was a weird one.
Tennis ball?
Kind of like a tennis ball, but it's definitely came through. There were some incredible. The biggest thing I took away from it is the number of young, good, fast bowlers in that region.
Yep.
And these guys were fantastic.
Well, I think it's sort of like it's almost Hawke's Bay. I mean, I was there about 6 weeks ago. And we had a 24-degree day. That was about 6 weeks ago.
That's right.
Yeah, so they get the great conditions to be able to produce those hard and fast wickets. That then, those are the younger bowlers coming through, get to bowl. It's like going to Australia. You've got a little slice of Australia there on the east coast of New Zealand.
Very much. And the thing is, if you put a little bit of grass on the wicket then, it encourages the fast bowlers to bowl fast. Mm. And I tell you what, I mean, if you look at CD, the number of good fast bowlers CD has produced, I'd say in the last 10 years almost.
10 years has been absolutely up.
Phenomenal. And that's, I would say, part of the reason. But we were amazed at the standard of fast bowling from young fellas, One of the highlights was Jesse Ryder played against us in one of the games.
Okay.
Yeah. And I tell you what, he still got it.
Look, at the end of the day, we talked about, I can't remember who it was we talked about earlier in the, Chris Gaines probably, and in terms of management, again, it was just the minders around Jesse Ryder. And I don't mean minders in terms of bounces, I just mean the influential role models in his life that just weren't there at the right times of his life that meant
that he
lost his way. But
absolutely.
I mean, geez, let's face it, I mean, as a New Zealand cricketer, you knew that it was detrimental to the team's culture of having Jesse Ryder in there, but you wanted to see him play.
I believe he was pretty much a street kid, and people who, they took him in and they did things and whatever, but it's just unbelievable. The guy, our fastest bowler, right arm over, he was bowling sort of across him, and the wind was going towards point, so from sort of mid wicket, so leg side to off side. Jesse Ryder would little movement of the front foot, and just suddenly the hands would come through, and just massively good wrists, and it went for six over point, because he just got it with the wind. And just smart, just absolutely smart. And I mean, we were just in awe. And, we talk about playing late and under your eyes and stuff. And he just does it for fun, And it was just, and he was fantastic. He spoke with some of our young players. One of them sort of bowls a bit like James Anderson. I think it's his hero. And he was mimicking him, saying, "You're Jimmy Anderson. Are you related, mate?" And stuff like that. And he was just having fun.
But that's it. I mean, and you know, he was a guy that enjoyed the game, just enjoyed the off field a bit too much.
Yeah. Look, the thing is this. This is where, for me, if he was in a good school where he had good role models, good peers, a guy that really took him in and changed his mindset to. You know, for me in Focus. Cricket, yeah, sacrifice and discipline and resilience, all of those things are must have if you want to succeed in your cricket.
And yeah, look, and you know, it doesn't matter, it's not just about your skills with the bat and ball, but it's mental skills as well. Talking That's to good. One of the coaches at Suburbs Rugby Club, and you know. He talks about the all the team go away and they've got extras. And it's like, what are extras? And I didn't know. And this is like, you know, it's like training's not just twice a week. It's like you've got twice a week training, team training, and then you've got your extras. What are you? Have you done your extras? Have you done your extra extras? What are you doing? And part of those extras can be the mental side of the game as well, can't it?
Completely. Just challenging yourself. You know, challenging yourself and. In different ways, and that intensity that with which you train with,
I brought that up because I was gonna. He's pinched my question because I was gonna ask you that. I was gonna say, hey, look. I mean, obviously, these days we see a lot of kids are picked up early in terms of rep teams or you know, talent identification, etc. But who are some of your talents, whether it's young or old? To keep an eye out for, or that other team should keep an eye out for in the Prince competition this year, without giving away too much.
Yeah. look, I mean, our philosophy, me and my assistant coach, is we're just trying to upskill them in the preseason and make them better players. And we give them the opportunity. And the whole thing we say is make us have to pick you by your performance, i.e., in the prems, if they're in reserves or they're in the thirds, then to the reserves or whatever it is. And we've got a few young fellas who are, you know, shoving the door down to try and make the prems and so on. And that's great. And we keep giving them as much opportunities as we can. And we actually use the T20 as one of the springboards.
Development springboard, yep.
Pretty much, because, you know, it's on a Wednesday and you know, some of the lawyers and accountants and whoever we have in our team, they can't make it to bloody, you know, Birkenhead on a Wednesday at 5 o'clock or 5:15 or whatever, you know.
Yeah, because you've got to leave the office at 3 to be able to make it at 5 for the game.
Exactly. And they'll be sick. So, you know, we actually use that. And that's what we did last year. And also partly because, you know, the 2 days, if you win, you get promotion. So that's a massive carrot. The 1 days, if you win, it's I believe the 1 days are the hardest. It's the hardest one to win because it's, you know, it's a really good competition. And then the T20, you know, obviously the team that's the best on the day, they win. And the pools are very interesting. I mean, we are in a pretty tough pool. We've got Howick in T20. We've got Howick. We've got Parnell. And last year, we played Parnell and we had Mark Chapman play against us. And Mark Chapman got 70 and Howick got 140, I think, or 80 or something. Then we played Howick and Glenn Phillips and Colin Munro played against us. I mean, you got almost no chance. Never no chance. But almost no chance to beat them.
And it takes one mistake from them and you're in the money.
They don't make many though, brother.
So go on. Highlight one young fella coming through that we're going to keep our eye out on.
Look, I'll give you two. I think for me, Carl De Beers, he's put a lot of work in this winter and it's still ongoing. He's a leg spinner.
Yeah, I was going to say he's a spinner, you're right.
And just got ridiculous the speed and the the energy he gets from such a short sort of run up is massive. And he's actually got fitter and fitter and stronger and stronger. I don't think Carl would mind me saying, before, I'd say 3-4 years ago, he was a bit of a podgy kid. And then suddenly who went to McLean's, who didn't play cricket. So he came to Grafton and, or they did play, but you know, yep. lower standards.
Lower levels. Yep.
And he's just developed and kept developing. And he's had a great winter where he's worked on so many things. So,
yep. Not just his game, but fitness as well.
Oh, fitness. He's like ridiculous now. Like he's got to the stage where, you know, how that endorphins kick in, and he's on another level. Like, I mean, you know, you just, like last year, I almost thought, you're almost too strong for it, because you get too strong. You're not, the flexibility is not there.
I was going to say, as a cricketer, you can't have muscles on muscles. It just gets in the way effectively, doesn't it? You got to have that sort of dexterity and flexibility.
That's right. Flexibility is key for me, you know, shoulders, knees, back, whatever it is. But yeah, I expect good things from him. And he's only 20, 21. And the things he does is amazing. But things he has to do is to become more consistent because leg spin, end of the day, especially, look, I think springtime's bloody hard, because you know, you get on a field and next minute it's cold and the captain tosses you the ball and you got to start bowling, and it's tough, you know, and especially if you're trying to bowl quick ragging leg spinners, it's not easy. So I mean, to me, he's one. And I think the other one's a, you know, definite guy that 3 years ago he played thirds. Last year he played reserves and he did really well for us. And he's another one who's just trained the house down. And he's a batsman and a bowler. He's an all-rounder. He's the Jimmy Anderson. Bowls like Jimmy Anderson. And batting, he wants to bat higher up this year, and again he's trained the house down, so you've got to give him a crack, and you know, and these are decisions we got to make in the next few weeks to try and see if we can get there, you know. But Cameron, we call him Cammy, trying to think of the surname now, but Cameron's his first name. And
yep.
Yeah. Awesome. Oh,
that's good. Yeah. We'll look forward to both of them and seeing how they progress through the year. And have you got one more warm-up game or to go?
Yeah. So this coming weekend, Saturday, the reserves are playing, I think, Parnell in a warm-up game. And Sunday, the Prems are going up to Northland. We're playing at Cobham Oval against Northland, which is a bit of a coup. I just emailed them, hoping there might be something come up, but the coach there, Neil,
forgotten his name. I'm going to say Neil Parlane.
Yes, it is. That is Neil Parlane. It is Neil Parlane. Wow. Yes, he's the coach. Well done, mate. And he's the coach, and they call him the Flea, and he knew my brother.
Yep.
He'd played together with my brother, and he was happy for us to come up and play a game, which to me, just playing at Cobham Oval, which is international.
Cobham Oval. Oh, yeah, fantastic.
Yeah, fabulous.
I mean, it's an international ground.
That's right. So this Sunday's that, and again, we've got to pick the teams tomorrow, actually. And so,
yep.
And this is the thing, the selection's the hardest thing, bro. I mean, to me, you know, I mean, it's obviously we have a way in which we select and we try our best to do the right thing. But again, it's just my opinion.
Sometimes hard calls have to be made.
Yeah, hard calls have to be made. And sometimes you just got to do it and hope that you've done the right thing, you know.
Exactly. You don't know until the last ball's bowled.
No. And, you know, and sometimes, you know, obviously I've watched cricket for so long, so you see someone in the nets and go, God, that guy's looking great, but is that going to transfer to the middle? Or other guys who look like crap and then they play well in the middle, you know. So it's all It's all hard. It's
hard. It's interesting. I mean, I suppose it doesn't show up in cricket so much, but in rugby, it's a classic one because in rugby, you can get an app, you know, oh, he's a lazy trainer or he just doesn't put the work in at training, but on the game day, and it's just like he's just another player.
That's right. Exactly right. So,
well, we better move on to talk a bit of IPL, I suppose. And we'll just quickly, we're going to quickly run through results in the last week, and then we'll look at the table. So just on October 13th, we're going back to, I think sort of roughly was when we sort of last left it. We've got Chennai Super Kings had a win by 20 runs over the Sunrisers Hyderabad. 14th of October, Delhi Capitals won by 13 runs over the Rajasthan Royals. And just moving along my ticker tape here. On the 15th of October, Kings 11 Punjab won by 8 wickets. They've been having a pretty rough time, but they finally got one over the over RCB, Royal Challengers Bangalore. Mumbai Indians, that have been travelling along nicely, got an 8-wicket win over the Knight Riders on the 16th of October. Royal Challengers Bangalore. By 7 wickets against the Rajasthan Royals. Yep.
That's the one that De Villiers went crazy.
The 32 off 12 balls.
Yeah. Well, it could have been 36.
Hang on. I'll just do that. And scorecard there. And we'll just, if I get this right, there we go. It's been a while. Yeah. It's been a week and a bit. We'll go. We'll bring it up and see what can we find it. There we go. Yeah, De Villiers. There we go.
55 on 22.
Strike rate of 250. But I think, you know, when we look at that, it doesn't really highlight the fact that, as you said, he actually scored 30 runs off 12 balls, 32 runs, something like that, off 12 balls. So he just went nuts in a particular little stanza, and it's just like game over, wasn't it?
Yeah. And I love, I think, Gurkirat, who's he's half decent, that guy. He can play. Yep. And he was with him, and he only got 19 off 17, but he made sure that he put De Villiers on strike, and he just backed himself. You know,
we know so well that when you've got someone on fire and the strike isn't rotated, we know what happens next. That player goes out. You know, and so it is so crucial for the guy at the other end. He might be going runner ball only, but that runner ball is so valuable. Mm.
Absolutely. I've got to give us a plug from a while ago where we did pick RCB, Mumbai and Delhi to be up there.
Right.
In our very first show. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I remember you picking everybody to be up there.
No, no. Kings 11. I didn't pick them. Anyway, look, but to me, I mean, look, proudly wearing my Delhi Capitals
shirt.
Yeah, which, I mean, they've been fantastic, you know, been so good to watch.
We'll go on to the so Delhi Capitals again, another one there with that 5-wicket win over Chennai Super Kings on that same day as AB de Villiers. And then we came to this morning.
Oh, and amazing.
Two crazy matches. Knight Riders winning a super over Sunrisers. Lockie Ferguson getting the job done for the Knight Riders there. And he isn't at game time. I retired. Carry on. Sorry, I'll tell my story in a second.
Yeah, look, for me, it's funny. I don't want to jinx him or even just say anything bad about him, but he was training the house down at Les Mills. Like, I mean, I don't go that often, but once in a while when I do go, I see him there, you know, and so he must be going there all the time for me to see him every other time that I go, you know, and we had a bit of a yarn, and he was humming. He was missing cricket, and he was really humming. And I wonder if this is a real strategic decision by KKR to play him this late in the tournament, so that he can now play every game
Yep.
Because he can sustain it till the till the finals.
Right. It's sort of like the energy just slowly sort of peters out sort of thing if you started.
At the start. But, I mean, you know, Delhi Capitals, they played their number one bowling quartet from the start, you know, Rabada and Noshke and stuff. So it'll be interesting what happens later on in the season to see if the fast bowling is going
to
be a little bit
messed up.
That's right. Now, I mean, Rabada, he's class. And we've seen game in, game out, he's just been, you know, the decisions he makes, been fantastic. And I've got to give Taz a plug here, because he did pick the fast bowlers to do better in the UAE than in India. And that's exactly what's happened. You know, I mean, there's been a few finger spinners like Aksar Patel and so on who've done pretty well.
Yep.
But for the most part, it's been fast bowlers who are doing really well. And
We'll bring that up in a second, and we'll just go through who's doing what where. Now, I'll just quickly, my embarrassing moment of the week for myself.
Yes.
I went along to the Aces sort of Auckland Cricket Open Day at Eden Park, and I'll give a plug out to Machine Road, which Lockie Ferguson and his brother are developing, which is a speedball radar using your phone as an app. And the like. And anyway, I was talking to him, and I got Lockie mixed up with Michael Bates. And I was like, I was talking to his brother as like, oh yeah, he'll be over there, part of the coaching structure. He's like, he's only 28. He's playing.
But I think it's interesting. Lockie's brother, isn't that Michael? Isn't it Michael? I don't know. But I think
No. I forgot his brother's name. Sorry, and I apologize profusely. But go check out that Machine Road. It's worth having a look at. Yeah,
fantastic to see. Look, for me, a young fella like Lockie and his brother to be doing something like this. I mean, this could be on everyone's phone. Check how fast do I bowl? But it's not just that. It's actually more. Hussein was telling me that. It's more. It's got more applications than just the speed. There's more things in there. I mean, I've definitely got to check it out one day to see how
Oops.
Yeah.
Are you there? Are you still there?
Yeah.
Give it a few seconds. This is what they actually. Once it opens up, it's taking a while to open up.
Fantastic.
They're taking screenshots. It basically takes a screenshot. I'll bring it onto Facebook, so I'll bring that up now. It's there.
Yeah.
So look, that's it. There we go. That's showing.
See.
Yeah. So that's that. It'll tell me, giving you a description of the delivery length, etc. Gives you a speed as well.
Right.
Yeah. And in this particular one, the ball pitched and cut back and hit the top of leg stump.
Right. Interesting.
But that's the feedback that you're getting. As well, so it's not just the speedball radar function, and they're building more capability into it as well.
There they go. Yeah. Now, look, he's a lovely guy. Seriously, Lockie, to me, you know, just one of the loveliest fellas. And the way he bowled this morning was phenomenal and so smart. He's got this little, you know, leg cutter slower ball thing that hits the top of off stump. I just can't fathom how he can do that, you know?
It's not just about speed, is it? It's the fact is that it's using the skill, full skill set, because two of the wickets that they showed in the highlights were actually from slower deliveries, not from fast balls.
That's right. That's right. The only lucky one was, I think, Williamson, which he bowled a short one, and Williamson could have hit it anywhere, and he just hit it straight to third man, which was a shame, but you know, that's life.
That's right. Cricket. And then I'm going to let you, because I had to rush off because I was been working all day since 7 this morning. but 2 super overs in the second match.
Yeah, so I watched the highlights of
the Mumbai Indians
game,
and Kings 11.
That's it. And it was unbelievable. So let me think what happened. I think it was Yeah, Mumbai were chasing, I think, if I'm not mistaken, and they looked like it was going to be a little bit too much, but they finally got there, and then they just drew. No, sorry, yes, that's right. And then it was super over, and they tied the super over. And it was something like, something ridiculous. It was six runs or something like that, and they tied it. And then there was another super over, but the interesting thing I noticed was everyone had to be different. The bowlers and the batters had to be different to the first super over. It couldn't be the same people.
Ah, is that a rule? That's a sort of a rule. You can't use the same guys on the first super over.
Yeah, I think it is. I mean, just from, I mean, I watched the highlights. It was highlights, all right. Every ball was a damn highlight, you know, because it was just going to fit two super overs plus a full game, and it was really good stuff. I was watching it with the boys, with my 6 and 4 year old. The 6 year old was just loving life, you know, watching it. And in the second super over, unfortunately, that's right. The first super over, the Bumrah bowled and just bowled an amazing, amazing over. Where hardly any runs. And then Shami came on and he bowled an incredible super over to, I think, Rohit Sharma and the South African guy, de Kock. And so they tied it. So they had another one. And unfortunately, Trent Bolt was bowling to Chris Gayle and he missed the first ball and he was a full toss, and you know what happens with Chris Gayle.
It's interesting, isn't it? I mean, like what we've seen, I can't remember if we actually talked on the show or before the show, a lot of low overs in the super overs, right? And it's like, but what that shows with Trent Bolt missing that first ball, it's about getting momentum and rhythm, right, in bowling or batting. And it's like, if you can get that first ball away, then you're going to get a few more balls away. If you get jammed up on that first ball and then those demon thoughts get into your head, it's like, oh, I've got to hit the next under the fence, and that's just it. More pressure.
The pressure is the word. And to me, the one thing that I think affects any player is pressure.
Yep.
You know, the more pressure that you apply on that first ball, you can apply more and more pressure if you get that first one right.
Yep.
You know, and unfortunately, Trent didn't get it right, and it was too hard from there.
So pressure is going to crush you, or it's going to turn you into a diamond.
Big time. And the thing is, as a player, if you know it, you know you can actually challenge the big guns. Yep. You know, whoever it is.
That's it.
And that's the key. It really is. And you know, and the thing, lovely thing with cricket is you can't take away some of the basics. The basics still apply. If you bowl a ball that's going to hit top of off stump, doesn't matter what your pace is. You know, the batsman has to take a risk to hit that away. You know, those are some of the basics. You know,
absolutely.
But, yeah,
absolutely. Mm. Well, talking of pressure and delivering, KL Rahul's still there at the top of the table, so he's maintaining his position. And when we look at he's got a decent lead at the top of the table there. Yeah. It's 525 runs, it's an average of 75. Now, after nine innings, it's not a fluke, is it?
No, he's a good player, but he's the captain, so he's really leading by the front there. But his opening partner is number two, which is interesting. But they've only won. Three games.
What's going on? You got the two top batters out there. Their strike rate's not too bad. KL Rahul's is a little bit on the low side for somebody at the top of the table. But at the end of the day, you got two guys at the top of the table, and you're struggling on the table, which we'll have a look at shortly. Look, I mean, it's still when we look at it amongst the top five. Apart from Faf du Plessis, it's great news for the for your Indian selectors, Indian supporters.
Yes,
the fact is that it's all your homegrown talent. That's not the internationals that are up there.
Very much. Yeah.
So KL Rahul at the top of the table in the bowling. So we'll look at the wickets. And again, Rabada, as you were saying, at the top with 19 wickets. That's actually that's strike rate. That's a great strike rate, isn't
phenomenal.
It?
Yeah. And look at the economy. It's seven.
Yeah.
To me, that's bloody good, you know.
But absolutely.
I think, and this to me, you know, lockdown, he's used his lockdown really well. Because I think he's looking mean and fit, and you know, he's just going great guns, and he really wants to bowl at the end, end of the innings, and be the finisher, and
take that responsibility on, being the senior bowler.
That's it, and he's done so well, man. He's really kicked the opposition where it counts, when you know, they do something. He'll just bowl a Yorker or bowl a, you know, back of a length. The options he's taking are just on the money. The control of his length is just phenomenal, Ashwin. So, fabulous.
And we're looking at bowling economy, and we'll bring that up. And, well, Ferguson. He's only had one game, so it's
one game. Yeah.
Interestingly enough, though, if we have a look at that, what we can tell from that, I'm assuming here, is that the super over – overs doesn't seem to be included, or did he not bowl his full four overs?
Well, in the super over, he bowled three balls. Yeah, three balls, and he got two wickets.
Wicket, run, wicket, wasn't it? Something like that?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. And to me, that's right.
So,
yeah, carry on.
That means that, I mean, like in their game, they only had the one super over. So if he bowls the first super over, he can't bowl the second one if there was a second super over.
No, very interesting. Yeah, those are interesting stuff. Chris Morris is a interesting one for me again.
It's a surprise, you
know? But he's looks like at RCB, he's finding his feet, you know. And this is, you just don't know who's going to do well where, you know. I like Axar Patel. I think he's been phenomenal in terms of what he's done for Delhi.
Got nothing to do with the fact that you got the Delhi Capital shirt on, right?
No, not at all. I just think, you know, this is a typical guy who is bowling with a real plan, and it's actually contributing to him batting better as well whenever he has, you know, seems to have a bat. So just that confidence is flowing through everything he does, which is great.
Oh, that's good. So basically, Lachie Ferguson – bit deceptive there, I suppose, after one match. We'll see how he goes. As you say, hopefully he starts there. Maybe that was the game plan all along for KKR, starting him sort of midway through the competition and then having him fresher towards the latter stages. And obviously he's repaid that faith so far. Let's see if he can keep it going. So moving to the table, if I've got the right... Hey, I clicked on the right link. We've got your team, the Delhi Capitals, there at the top. Mumbai Indians, Royal Challengers Bangalore, and Kolkata Knight Riders, the top four at this stage, and it looks like they're starting to move away from the bottom four.
Yes, yeah, very, very important next game for the likes of Sunrisers, Chennai, and Rajasthan and Kings XI for me.
Yep. So the next week is going to be crucial.
Yeah, I mean, if they don't get a win there, it's going to there's going to be a definite top four, bottom four.
Yeah,
you know, like if Delhi, Mumbai, Royal Challengers, and Kolkata keep winning, then there's going to be a definite top four, top four, bottom four, which probably not which best for the competition.
Going to say for the competition, it's going to be a bit of a shame because effectively you've got your semi-finalists already done and dusted.
Almost,
you're just going to be fighting over which position. And who's playing who?
I mean, to me, Delhi and Mumbai, I was going to say, but then Royal Challengers Bangalore are right up there as well.
Yeah.
I mean, they've won majority of their games. I mean, I think Delhi lost two, and Mumbai and Royal Challengers Bangalore have lost three.
Yeah.
And that's pretty good going because every team has got match winners, man. I mean, it's just chocker. You know,
it is.
All the best players are pretty much playing there. So, you know, it's a great competition. It really is for me. And there's still a fair few games left.
Yeah, there are still quite a few games left. And I mean, like, you look at, so we've got like coming up tomorrow, Chennai and Rajasthan Royals. So they'll both be fighting tooth and nail, as I said, to get the win out of that one so that can start trying to get closer to that top four. Both of them at the languishing at the bottom. Kings 11 up against sort of, you know, against the Delhi Capitals. And AJ was quite optimistic about the Kings 11 pre-season start, but this is starting to get desperation time for the Kings 11. So they'll be on the 20th.
They've won their last two, which is a good thing. So you can almost say
they're on the right way.
Yeah, right trend. Mm-hmm. The people that, you know, concern me are people like Chennai. I mean, to me, you know, look at those last five games. They got a win, loss, loss, win, loss.
Yeah, no consistency there.
No, and they're just they're looking a little bit, dare I say it, a bit old and stale. And even the young guys are looking a bit stale, like the likes of Jadeja, who's, you know, a match winner.
Yeah.
But just not looking likely, you know. So, yeah, interesting, man. I mean, I don't know.
We'll see. Well, this week, I think, as said, this week we'll sort of we've been waiting for the first few weeks. And it's just like everybody stayed bunched, and there wasn't really much happening on the table. Mm-hmm. We're starting to get that separation. This week, coming week, will be interesting to see whether the guys that are the teams that are in the bottom four, whether they can sort of make a lunge for that top four and rescue their season, or will it be all over? I think by the time we're talking about it next week, some teams are going to find that they're planning for next year or 6 months away, which is when it starts again.
Yeah. That's right. I think next Monday, there'll be either will go, oh, the bottom team's caught up, or, you know, and it's a close competition, or...
Yep.
There's definitely a divide.
Start planning for next time.
Yeah. I was going to say between the haves and the have-nots.
Yep.
But, yeah, we'll have to see.
Well, moving on to, I suppose, the sad news of the week, and one of New Zealand's greats. And you know, some of the stats when you go look at them are just phenomenal. But John Reid passed away this week at an age of 92. Before he passed away, he was New Zealand's oldest surviving Test cricket player. It's sad, but I mean, obviously these things happen. But it's like one of New Zealand's greats passing on.
I think he was part of that, wasn't he? Captain in the very first win we had, Test win against South Africa. I think
he was the captain of the first win against South Africa. It was an interesting talk, because he got his highest test score in the same win as well. And you've got to remember, it's in South Africa. And it was at a time when South Africa actually had some very fiery fast bowlers. And I know that a lot of the team were quite banged up, and they retired hurt coming back and all sorts. So, and he was captain around that time, and obviously still keeping that motivation up, and obviously a strong leader and sort of follow me boys type of person.
Yeah, I think one of the things I read was that he batted with a bold sense of purpose. And to me, that sounds like, you know, not a backward step. And he was very proud of the hooking, in terms of, he said, you're either a hooker or a ducker. And, you know, if you got a pass, and, you know, the helmets weren't there in his time. So basically,
what's a helmet?
You know, so there's a fastball coming at your head, you hook it. And if you get it for six, great. But if you miss it, then your head could be in trouble. And to me, I can't even fathom that, having, you know, grown up with helmets all our lives.
Yeah, that's it.
Such a risky thing to do. And I think most people would have just ducked. If you're not a good hooker, you just duck. But he took people off.
Well, digressing from our topic at the moment, but it's just like people learnt to pick the ball to either sway, duck, or you played it. And it's just something that you got used to. I never played with a helmet ever. And it's just like you just got – it's just something you did. Obviously, I never faced the pace of the bowling that John Reid did. But, you sort of think as an element of these days, whether players, because they're not accustomed to it, then, and actually we're getting more injuries these days with helmets on than we did before helmets came along.
No, I agree. I agree. Look, I'm just reading something that he said.
Yep.
And he said, fast bowlers never worried me because I was a hooker. Either you hook or you let it go. You might get hit in the shoulder a couple of times, but so what? Without helmets, and helmets were invented 18 years after I retired, you got hit on the head. If you got hit on the head, you were dead. So you had to get out of the way or hook. And if you hooked a fast bowler, he didn't bowl too many more there. Yep. So, you know, I mean, I love his – you can see the kind of person he was in terms of, you know, no nonsense, lead from the front, take them on.
Not taking a backward step, exactly. Take them on. It's just like, And it's just like it wasn't just with the bat. He actually did bowl as well. So, I think he was part of a team that went to England and did well over there as well. So,
yes. It says he's a bustling, fast-medium bowler with clever variations and an excellent fielder who could also keep wickets to a high standard. So, look, he was...
He actually is that tour of England. He actually ended up keeping wickets in one of the matches. And I won't say it because I think I'm getting my stats wrong. But I think he won. There was another test he won as well with New Zealand as the first as well. So, but look, a phenomenal talent that New Zealand had, and it is obviously is unfortunate just at a time when we had good players, but. We didn't have the strength within cricket that we have today.
No,
That would have meant that because obviously we've gone through the times which we knew of with the Richard Hadleys and the Martin Crowes, where teams were 80s. Built around one player, and we did have some success. But generally, you don't have success off having one strong player. You got to have multiple, if not the whole team, having some strength.
A role, I think. For members of the team to have a particular role which they did really well, even if it wasn't, like a Richardson who played only three shots, but he played them really well. So, that meant that, he averaged close to 50, which was amazing considering he was a spin bowler who became a batsman, but he studied the game and analyzed it and made it a success.
Digressing here totally, but just on the Mark Richardson thing, I think, everybody wants to have a go at Mark Richardson. He's retired how long ago, but they still want to have a go. The guy's phenomenal, really, when you think about, as you just said, he was a spin bowler when he went to Otago, and he turned into, effectively, some people will scoff at this, but a world-class test match opening batsman. Who didn't throw his wicket away. He knew his limitations. He did his job as a test match batsman, holding up an end. Questionable whether he should have played one day is. And he'll probably admit to that, especially when he ran out Brendan McCullum. But, as a test match batsman, did his job 110%, you'd say, using sporting terminology. And it's just like to mock someone who reinvented himself into that success level is just ridiculous.
No, he actually, he's got a very, very sharp cricketing mind. He's just a bit of a personality. And obviously nowadays he's just
people up the wrong way.
DJ. And that's his job to push people the wrong way.
Yeah, that's it. Push the buttons.
Get a reaction, And but just on John Reid, I think it's important we remember and acknowledge these guys who were such a big part of New Zealand cricket history. This guy paved the way for future generations. And even Martin Crowe, when passed away. To me, he's done so much good for the game, especially in the latter part of his life.
How would you like to see players like, I mean, as I said, John Reid, even though it was outside of our era of ever seeing him play, we still know of John Reid. We know the caliber of John Reid and how good he was for New Zealand. How do you think they should be sort of remembered or honoured? And what should be done?
Oh, good question. Look, it's a very good question. I mean, I think Richard Hadlee got the old title of Sir, didn't he? And I think the only cricketer to have it while he was playing. I add. But I think
Sir, would you like the bowl?
Yeah, that's right. Can I, sir, can I have your cap? And it's a fantastic question. I mean, to me, John Reid in particular, I mean, you know, you look at New Zealand teams and when we've been successful is when we've been like this, a little bit up the opposition kind of thing, instead of being too nice and whatever else, which
would be in their face. Kinda,
yeah, in their face. Very similar to like Sri Lanka. For years and years, they were nice
guys.
They'd lose and they'd smile and stuff. Yeah. But God, they changed that with Ranatunga, you know, who just said, nah, stuff them. And yeah, pretty much tell everyone off. And they won a World Cup because of that, you know?
Yeah.
So look, it's a really good question. And I mean, to me, New Zealand cricket, officialdom should be thinking about things like this. Which
I think in terms of as you say, we've got Richard Hadlee who's been knighted, and I'm struggling at this point in time to think of another cricket player that's actually been knighted. And really it's for New Zealand cricket and the administration to push for those honours. Obviously a player doesn't push for themselves. I mean, we know that it's just not right. But administration should be pushing for those players and to be getting those honours. Because to acknowledge it. For my mind, I mean, we seem to finally be moving in. It's glacial, our movements, but we're moving in the right direction. You know, we've got around the world, we have Australia's probably the best example, where they go and name stands after their greats and the like. And Eden Park has a couple of statues around it in terms of we've got Michael Jones, obviously a rugby player outside of Eden Park and the like, but we need to see a lot more of it. We need to celebrate our successful people, the leaders of our sports, our community, whatever it is, and to celebrate to celebrate what they've achieved, what they've done for the country,
and remember them.
But I think that's who people look up to. And even if they're gone or they've stopped playing or whatever, you still see that person, and you hopefully, especially children and that, are striving to be that statue, whoever that guy is, to remember them. Yeah. And it sort of like leads to it sort of thing. So I think our administration of sport needs to step up, because we're a country that doesn't really celebrate success.
Not enough.
We basically, and I know I'm way guilty of this myself, is just like, well, that was a good achievement. Well, next one. What's next? You don't take that time to celebrate anything. You just move on to, well, that's fish and chip paper. What's next?
Yeah, I agree with you. Look, I love that. I love what you said about even a stand or, a statue somewhere pertinent. It has to be.
Yeah.
Has to be the appropriate thing, in a place that John Reid maybe called home. I'm not, I don't know enough about John Reid to say that. But
well, interesting enough, he lived out his later life in Auckland, but his playing career was for Otago and Wellington. Right. Basin Reserve. On the entrance of the Basin Reserve would be a statue of him there in a classic pose shot, whatever, a hook.
There you go. Are you putting your hand up? Ashwin.
Yeah, not very good sculptor, mate. Not very good sculptor. It might end up like looking like a stick man. Like it looks like a pack and save ad.
No, but really good idea. And, you know, I mean, hopefully someone's listening who can make something like that happen.
Like that.
Because to me, even at the gates, maybe, you know, the John R. Reed gates, or I don't know, even if there is something already, you know, I'm not.
Yeah, I'm just wondering if there is something in the basin or not. But if not, then we need to start looking at those sorts of things.
Mm.
Absolutely.
I can't agree more.
Well, that looks like a good place to leave it. We've done our normal and gone over time as we always do.
We do. No problems, me and you talking, brother, that's for sure.
Well, I think the great thing I've learned about today's show with little preparation is that we put out a great show without preparation as well.
Yeah. The only thing is it's very hard to do it by yourself because you need to, you know, this whole,
back and forward.
Otherwise it's too hard.
Well, it's been great having you on the show, and we look forward to getting you back on the show as well as some of the other guys as well. Hopefully, one of the other things we look forward to as the season now starts to get underway locally is to get some feedback, what's happening at the grassroots level. So it'll be great to, obviously, with your involvement there, Taryn's involvement, obviously, as well, and Hussein with Parnell, Taryn with QMU. To understand what's happening at grassroots level. If you're out there and listening, if you're in other parts of New Zealand, you know, honestly DM us because we'd love to talk to you as well in terms of what's happening at grassroots level at your club around the country. So, but in terms of today, thank you very much for being on the show today, Shrubin. Thanks for everybody tuning in and watching this and listening to this. And remember to download this onto your podcast device. And listen to us on the run, on the go, and make sure you're tuning into New Zealand Sport Radio during the week. Obviously, now swinging from the hips on the Monday night, so the best night of the week is now on Monday. Tuesday nights, we did have basketball. I believe the NBA season is over, and so we'll be looking to bring something else there. Wednesday nights, we've got the league show. Thursday nights will be your home for your rugby discussion on general topics. And then Friday will be the preview for the rugby coming up over the weekend, and Sunday we'll be looking at a review of what's just happened. But remember to keep it here for your cricketing fix with Swinging from the Hips, and we'll see you back again here Monday night at 8 p.m. and thank you for watching.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.